Hagayo, and welcome to the Otaku Host Club podcast. We are on the road to paradise, and this week we are talking about episode 63, or From One Hand to Another. I'm kind of sad because I feel like I missed the watch party, and I missed like an integral part of viewing. Like, I've only viewed it like once during the watch party and then once on my own. But this time I was trying to watch it on my own and I fell asleep and I had to fucking rewind it halfway through and replay it. And then I like fell asleep again. And then I like rewatched the whole thing all over again. And I'm just like, man, I messed up my routine here.
Yeah. I felt that way too today. I'm like, what day is it? Is it Sunday? Do we record? Like, are we talking about it now? And I was like, fuck no, we got to watch it. And then I rewatched it right afterwards.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is weird.
I like the watching it one day and then like coming home from work and like watching it right before we record again.
It's fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Threw my whole week off, man.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So the manga chapters, so this covers material from three chapters.
Three, so not two. Okay.
Well, but I think the idea here is that this is not, they're pulling from different chapters into each episode. That is to say that it is not just a flat adaptation, you know, straight from paper to screen, but they're taking certain scenes and certain imagery from and kind of mixing, you know, rearranging them in a sequence that makes it better as a, you know, viewing an episode of television. And yeah, I think that makes sense and is reasonable. But this covers draws from chapters 97, 95, and 98. Really? That is very like spread out all over the place.
Yeah.
This was an interesting episode because it continued towards the end, like after the credits, post credits, and they're like trying to stuff as much into this episode as possible.
They really are. This episode, I was like, wait, what? Wait, what? Wait, where are we now? Wait, oh my God, what? they're like, they have ADHD in this episode.
Yeah, the first opening scene is, you know, it kind of just throws you in. There's no establishing shot. You know, there's no narration.
They kind of did that last episode with Reiner and his mom just like getting right into it on the bed.
Hmm.
You know, you come into like his mom just like talking.
That's true. Falco is talking to Reiner and then runs back to meet up with Eren. So it's like a little, it's almost a flashback. Or a flash forward, I don't know. I think that's why it's confusing.
Is it a flash anything?
It seems like it's taking place right before
a week before the ending credit thing.
See, I thought it fit in with the father or with Jaeger, the grandfather. We'll get to that, but the festival was happening. Yeah. See, I'm still figuring it out.
I think you're thinking way too hard about it. I
mean, okay.
We're thinking way too hard about it. Okay, Dan.
Yeah, it's just Falco having a conversation with Reiner, and then he runs it back over to Eren and takes the letter and drops the letter in the mailbox, and it's just like some mundane, everyday type stuff. Yeah, just another day.
Just another day.
Because we know Falco's been delivering letters for him. Yeah, on a routine basis, they reference the idea that he does this regularly. So,
I like to have thought that it was all on the same day that, you know, Eren meets the doctor in the courtyard. But take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I thought the meeting the doctor in the courtyard was a very interesting scene to me because Eren. I guess I was expecting Eren to have some kind of emotional reaction to meeting his grandfather. And he has to know that's his grandfather. I don't see why he wouldn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, he just doesn't care.
Let's establish what the hell is going on in this episode?
Yeah, somebody do it for me, because I fell asleep twice, so I'm not the best person to ask.
So yeah, the main thing about this show, about this episode, is the Tiber family visiting, right?
Yeah,
they're in town. Mm-hmm. You meet Willie, Mr. Willie.
And does Willie have a famous voice actor? For a half second, I swear to God, he sounded like Char.
That's what I thought. So I looked it up, and he is not the Char that we were thinking of. He is in the Gundam series, but he's the biggest thing I saw was Kakashi from Naruto.
Oh, who's Kakashi?
Interesting.
Who's Kakashi?
The voice actor?
Yeah, who's the character that?
Oh, Willie.
I was going to say he's the best Willie? Character. Yeah, mm-hmm. Kakashi is the best character of Naruto.
Mm, so arguably, yeah.
I like him a lot. Suichi Ikeda is the Japanese voice actor for Char. And it's funny you say that, Dan, because I picked up on it too. I'm like, this sounds exactly like Char.
Yeah, for having.
I always do that. Yeah. I'm always like, man, this sounds familiar. And then I go look it up, and it's like completely wrong. I'm like, okay, damn, I do not know anything about voice acting at all.
Well, and I think it's got to be. We also don't speak the language at all.
Yeah, we don't speak Japanese. So it's
not like we're hearing.
Yeah, but some of these girls.
Well, all the girls from like the harem shows all sound the same. I would agree with that. But some of the bigger voice actors.
We meet the Tiber family and they're chilling.
Yeah.
And chilling in the house. So they're clearly some hot shit because they have their own personal army who are huge. I mean, physically, these guys are head and shoulders above everyone else in the room. And it's not obvious why exactly all these people are gargantuan. It's not like they're the chosen Eldian elite warriors or something. But the Tiber family is a large family with several old people, several adults, several young kids that are running mm-hmm. around yelling and screaming and horsing around. They knock over a piece of furniture. And William Tiber makes the point that one of them is the... Warhammer Titan, can't you mm-hmm. tell which one? And our main general guy, whose name I forget, but he's come to meet the Tiber family and goes, yeah, I have no idea who the Warhammer Titan is, but I know who it is.
Oh my god, that man's eyes are so crazy. In that whole episode, he like his eyes look insane. Like, I don't know what's going on in that head in there. Like, he crazy.
Yeah, I think he, well, they kind of, he's got similar eyes to the training guy in back on Paradise. Mm. Well, I forget his name exactly.
They look like they've seen a lot.
Yeah. So the
and they're still trying to process.
Well, this general guy, I think, on the one hand, the kind of weird racism that he has displayed at various points is a downer, but he comes across in this episode as extremely astute and thoughtful. You know, he mm-hmm. correctly surmises that the Tiber family controls Marley, pulls the strings, you know, from the background, mm-hmm. which Willie Tiber confirms. And then he goes on to make the point that or the general goes on to make the point that, you know, Marley is pushing itself to perpetual warfare, and the citizens of Marley basically don't care because they don't feel any impact, any repercussions for their actions. And the only way to pull Marley back from the brink is to put, you know, start enlisting, you know, conscripting Marley, Marleyan citizens, and forcing them to participate in war and see the horrors of war, feel the horrors of war for themselves, and then they will, you know, stop being such a militaristic and imperial society, you know. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense to me. I agree. You know,
only if there is TV, you know, TV news, like in Vietnam.
Yeah, but I don't know. On the one hand, I recognize that this is true, that the protest movement around the Vietnam War
was galvanized by the kind of oncoming popularity of TV that wasn't there beforehand, you know, and the ability for news to show this footage, you know, as it came. But does that, I mean, I don't know, were people more tolerant of war prior to the TV, or and similarly, have our feelings about, like, have we become, like, we have TV now, but it's not like people go bananas, you know, it's not like Americans go so nuts about the perpetual state of war that America has been in, you know, like,
unless it affects us directly.
Yeah. I mean, we've been in perpetual war in the Middle East for our entire adult lives, but there's not some large-scale protest movement based around that. And we know that this is happening, you know. It's not like we don't see images of this on TV. It's not like we don't see images of this in media, left and right. You know, the horrors of war at this point are extremely well-documented, but I don't know if that's, if it's just fatigue or callousness or like information bombardment, so you know, overload, so you just start shutting down. But anyway, the point is, I'm not convinced that the TV is going to help the Marley people get out of their warmongering.
Well, he's also there, he says he's there to see the Helos statue, and you know, it's this statue of this guy with a big spear, he's jabbing it into the face of Beast Titan of the time?
Is that A-Titan.
A-Titan?
A-Titan.
I have this theory that it might be the Ackermans who is related to this person. I know Dan will know this for sure, but that's just my... I was like, what if that were the case? Because they're like, you know, like you said before in the recap, that they're the dogs of, you know, this family. But the family in Paradise specifically.
Yeah, the Kings.
The Kings family. Yeah. But I wonder if there's a correlation. Anyway, interesting scene.
Yeah, and then we jump back to our warrior unit. We see we see Peck running around on all fours, all creepy like.
She creepy. Yeah. She said, I'm just comfy like this. Let me be.
Just walking on all fours. Yeah,
some horror film-esque thing.
Yeah, that's probably why she can be in Titan form for 2 weeks. She's like, I'm already comfy like this. Let me just stay comfy.
But wasn't there a race before that?
I didn't remember if the race was before or after that.
Falco and Gabby.
Yeah. Falco finally beats Gabby.
Yeah. And then
to great cheer from all of his peers.
Yeah. And Falco tells her that he's doing it for her and she doesn't get it.
Yeah, she's still sucked into the idea that the politics of the idea that to be a, you know, to become the Armored Titan is this great honor that will cement my family standing and my family's good fortune into the future, and why would you deny me this amazing honor? Whereas Falco kind of correctly understands that, yeah, you know, like, I don't want you to suffer through 15 years of, you know, military brutality and then you just fucking die. I want you to have a nice life.
And she's like, but I want to do it.
Yeah, and you know, right, she's a child, and that's a key angle of this stuff. But yeah, Gabby's a big girl. She can decide what she wants to do and what she believes, you know?
Yeah, I mean, she like blew shit up already in war, so, you know, she's
a big girl. Did they ever discuss why they're so young, other than the fact that they got 15 years? Like, why do they start so young?
I feel like it's one of the, I don't know if they explained it, but my theory is just that they are of prime time age, you know? They're like physically, they can be physically fit.
So like,
but I don't know if that means anything.
If they, so what age was everyone when they became, like, what age was Reiner when he became a Titan? He was like, what?
About the same age. I thought like 12, 13.
12 or 13. And then he's got 15 years 13. Once he become 13. Yeah. He's got 15 years, so that puts him at 28 when he dies. Is that so? That gives him most of his 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really our physical peak? I thought our physical peak was like 25 to 35.
I thought it was like teenage to early to late 20s.
Hmm. Oh, okay. Word. So I think you're right, Amelia.
Only because right. Like Olympians aren't old, you know.
Mm. Ooh, good point.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I think your theory is right, Amelia.
Starting young, figured out. And then mm-hmm. eventually they'll be at right peak. They, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Once they've like, I feel like it's like, start them young because obviously they've got to get used to their Titan body and how it works and develop their skills as a Titan, and then they can use it real good, you know.
Mm-hmm. Unlike Shinji, mm-hmm. Shinji Ikari, little fucker.
Yeah.
Wait, what? We were talking about?
Evangelion.
We're talking about that new rebuild of Evangelion trailer that came out a couple days.
Oh yeah.
Not the episode, guys. Save it for bi-weekly.
So I was wondering why we were shown these scenes of, like, you know, the bread dealer, the drunk bread dealer guy, you know, wrapping his arms around what's her face and being like, Gabby, you're the champion of the people, and the girl's like, oh, that's great, but I'm not Gabby. and when I watched it, I wondered, what is the purpose of this scene? But I think this stuff has to be, you know, to further inform and cement the cultural context of the kids and the warriors within the Eldian ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we see that, like, they're basically celebrities. Everybody knows who they are. You know, the guard, the ghetto guards, the Marley ghetto guards talk to them in an extremely familiar and friendly manner and joke around with them. Like, everyone knows who they are. Everyone wants to see them succeed. You know, they, you know, everyone gives them free stuff and engages with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they really, they feel the boost in their daily lives for being part of the warrior unit. And I think that must reinforce Gabby's sense that, mm-hmm. you know, why would you deny me this opportunity to be, you know, become the armored Titan? You know, like,
yeah.
Everybody, you know, I see in daily life that,
well, she wants people to cheer for her, you know.
Yeah.
She wants to seem useful. She wants to prove to everybody that, you know, she's a good Eldian and not a bad one.
Yeah,
I like the music choice in the race scene. I think they use that song twice, but it's like one of the only few pieces of music in this, and it's sort of uplifting.
Yeah, it's like happy acoustic. Party music or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you get to see them just be kids.
Yeah,
for the first time.
Yeah, and we really get that feeling towards the end when they go to the fair.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Fair, is that the right word? The
festival.
Festival. Yeah.
So one of the things that's going on in this episode is that Willie Tiber is setting up a giant street festival in the ghetto.
I'm just saying, though, he doesn't look like a Willie. You know what I mean? Like, he looks like a William.
Yeah, that's fair.
Xavier.
Just saying. I just had to say that because everyone keeps calling him Willie, and I'm just like, he doesn't look
just
like
call
a
him
Willie.
Will or something.
Yeah, Will.
Yeah.
Willie, you gotta go the whole big Willie, free Willie thing. Mm. No.
Well, but
work. Okay. Anyway, sorry, Dan, didn't interrupt.
Willie is so informal, but I think that informality, that like mixture of formal and informal, is a key part of the Tiber. Place, you know, kind of the context of the Tiber family in Attack on Titan. And we see that at the fancy party. So Willie Tiber sets up William Tiber. He sets up this big fancy party where he brings in all the foreign dignitaries and all the foreign diplomats and all these people. And he intends to make an announcement like, you know, I am throwing a giant street festival tomorrow, and I invite everyone to come and participate and, you know, partake in this Eldian street festival. And I will have a kind of announcement / theater performance about kind of the future of Eldian role in modern society and future of Marley state policy and whatnot. And it's interesting because, you know, at this point we know that he is pulling, you know, Tiber is pulling the strings of Marley from the background. And when we see his interactions with all these foreign dignitaries, it is like extremely informal. You know, William Tiber doesn't hold a specific title or a specific position in the government, but he exercises authority and commands respect from all the different foreign dignitaries in ways that the Marley government officials don't have. You know, like the Marley diplomat, the head of state or whatever, head of the State Department, makes a little speech and it's really tasteless and stupid, and all the foreign dignitaries in the room get visibly angry about it and they're like, what the fuck are you even talking about? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And William Tiber immediately diffuses the situation with a couple easy breezy words, and he gets thunderous applause, and everyone is like, oh, it's our guy, the man of the people. Like, what a lovely individual. Of course, we're just going to, you know, let's, hey, remember that time we were hanging out as kids? Hey, remember when you came over to my house and we had a nice party? Like, wow, you're looking so great. You know, like, everybody loves this guy. And yeah, it's just interesting the way that, and this is kind of remarked on in earlier episodes as well by other members of the warrior unit, that, like, you know, the Tiber family, for being Eldians, have lived the good life and kind of wardened themselves away in their mansion, away from the rest of the Eldians, and they're like the arbitrarily chosen good ones, you know. But they're not even like the face of the Eldians per se. They're not like, we never get any sense that the rest of Eldians are like, oh, if only we could be like the Tiber family. You know, it's not like they're reading about the Tiber family in tabloids and keeping track of them like we keep track of the Kardashians or something. They really are like lurking in the background. They're like New World Order style shit.
Yeah, Illuminati.
Yeah, exactly. They are like, they're like Illuminati style shit.
Yeah, it is shit. He does say in one scene that Willie, he says, I'm simply the one who holds the wheel, like the guy Theo is like, you know, you are the commander in chief, if you will, of war. And he's like, no, I don't want that power. It's interesting. He's there, but you know, he knows the responsibility that he holds, the power that he holds.
Yeah. I thought that was very interesting as well. The idea that, you know, and we can compare that to Aaron Yeager, you know, that Aaron is, you know, struggling against fate, struggling against what he perceives as his destiny. And he is supposedly given this allotment in life, and he does everything he can to fight back against that and to grow beyond that. And William Tiber is very much like, you know, this is my lot in life and I wish it weren't that way, but I can't fight against it. I have to succumb to it, you know. He kind of makes that point, or I guess gives this feeling of not exactly neutrality, but like pacificity when he is discussing Marley politics with the general. And the general makes the point that, like, well, the Marleyan people are like, they're all warmongers only because they don't know the horrors of war. And William Tiber makes the point that, well, you know, that is true, but, you know, that is their choice, and that is the choice that we of the Tiber family have given them as the people that, you know, pull the strings of government here and pull the strings of power. We thought that this was the best way of kind of righting the wrongs of the past, of, you know, giving the Marleyan people the agency and the resources to choose their own destiny after they were, you know, slammed by the Eldians and enslaved and killed off by the Eldians for so long. And this is the choice they made. They decided to be warmongers, and that is their, you know, that's their right. You know, that's their decision, for better or for worse. And I can do nothing but just let it play out and let the people do as they will, you know? Yeah, I thought that was good stuff.
Can we get to the juicy part?
Yeah. When they're all in the festival?
No.
I really like the part when they were all in the festival and they're like screaming about the ice cream and Reiner's paying for everything, but then he looks looks at the smiling Gabby and thinks about like, oh, I'm doing this all for, you know, my beloved little niece.
I'm in the basement.
Oh, well, what about the courtyard? We brushed over the courtyard.
I know, but I really want to talk about that.
Yeah, courtyard's pretty interesting too.
It's intense.
Okay, let's go.
It's dramatic.
It's dramatic.
I was thinking of the courtyard where William Tiber tells the general that he's going to kind of get rid of all the military leadership and leave our general guy as the new commander in chief.
I was talking about the doctor.
Yeah, I know. That's what you guys were talking about. Yeah, mm-hmm. That just occurred to me right now.
He crazy.
Yeah. Aaron's sitting on the bench, and this doctor walks up, who we think is a doctor, walks up and sits down next to him and starts, you know, telling him about his past and how he let his son leave. And one can only imagine that his name is Jaeger, so he's got to be his
grandfather. Oh, yeah.
Aaron's he's got to be grandfather.
Got to be the granddaddy.
He did say like, my son escaped and never came back. I'm so sad.
Ah! Yeah. And then Aaron's just like, okay. Sucks for you.
I was surprised by Aaron's apathy about all that. And I was I was kind of surprised that Grandpa Jaeger literally went insane over this stuff. Really? Mm-hmm. Like
PTSD thing?
Definite PTSD. Absolutely. For sure. You know, like you're like stuck in this like internment camp and your only two children like run away for whatever reason you don't know yet until, you know, later. And then the one girl gets like mauled by dogs and then the other boy just like runs away.
Yeah, I guess. This is not the only time we've seen Grandpa Jaeger. You know, we see Grandpa Jaeger at the time that his daughter was killed, and he's relatively blasé about it, which is something that Grisha Jaeger really holds against him and hates about him. And then we see when Zeke turns in Grisha and Dina, and Zeke confides in his grandparents and goes and lives with his grandparents after this. So we see, you know, again, Grandpa Jaeger is presumably a fit parent, and he's not shown on screen going bananas at this point. You know, he seems relatively like, oh, you know, Zeke, truly, you know, my surrogate son, he's my grandson, and fuck my dumbass son, you know, restorationist son or whatever, he deserves it. So it just seems bizarre to me that later on in life this becomes such a huge mental collapse for Grandpa Jaeger. But what I thought was truly interesting about this scene is that Aaron Jaeger's got the baseball mitt.
Explain that reference.
The baseball and the glove.
Who else do we know that is constantly referencing baseball and throwing a baseball?
Zeke.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So what is the meaning of Aaron Jaeger having a baseball mitt in this scene?
He's going to turn into a Titan and then throw a baseball at him.
Yeah.
Zeke.
It says Zeke.
I'm convinced that, you know, these shows don't just do things for arbitrary reasons. So there's got to be a reason why Aaron Jaeger is showing having a baseball mitt.
Because he's going to go play baseball with Zeke in the courtyard.
Yeah, and I know, you know, what this symbolism is really getting
at. I'm just trolling. Just trolling over here.
I want you and our listeners to...
You're doing this...
Give a pause of thoughts to what that symbolism might be trying to tell us.
You're like Ocean Omeme, and he's like, I can't give you the right answer. You have to find the answer for yourself. And I'm like, just give me the answer.
It's
like,
no, you want me to give that. Do you want me to give you the answer?
Yeah,
No.
No.
But I feel like this is something a teacher would do in school.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be like, think about this.
Yeah.
And then let me know in the next class what the answer is.
Yo, and I'd be like, he'd be like, I forgot you even asked me that question. So,
so the festival starts. Gabby is so excited. She gets to eat ice cream. Who does she remind you of, though? I'm flipping around on you, Dan. Who is she? Who is she like? What character is she like?
Within Attack on Titan?
Within Attack on Titan.
Sasha.
On Paradise, yes. Yeah.
Little baby Sasha. She even has like the same color hair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are you pointing this out for later, Jeffrey?
No.
You just wanted to make a connection. Okay, because I'm like, should I be paying attention? Should I?
It is her stepsister. I don't know.
Yeah. I do think, oh, well, actually, it's fascinating that you say that.
Oh, my God. No.
But I do think.
I don't like that you've read the manga, Dan. It's all over your face.
I do think that it's interesting, or like, it's telling how in the ending credits scene, when Reiner is dragging Gabby, and Gabby is kind of joyfully like, we're experiencing so many new, totally different things. It feels like something is really about to change. And we see, from Gabby's perspective, she's saying this out of this exuberation, out of this like, finally the Tiber family is going to throw this big festival and we're partying and we're hanging out and people are going to, we got a new plan that's going to work and people are going to see that Eldians are cool and, everything's going to work out. And I feel like this is also, kind of the dual meaning message to the audience that, we've seen so many new things with all these new, Marley, Eldian warriors and characters and whatnot. And it's about time for something new to happen. And we see the beginnings of that in the basement.
In the basement.
Back in another fucking basement, man.
Oh, what is man, this? No more basement. Yeah. Twister.
That shit had my heart was beating faster during that scene.
Same, me too. Though.
When they kick into that do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Yeah, I was like, oh shit, man, I was going down.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how he reacts. Right.
Okay, so also about the doctor scene, Aaron's been sending letters back to Paradise, and he says he tells Falco it's for his family, so his family knows that he's healthy and he's gonna return. But we can only assume that it's to Mikasa and Armin so that they know
what's going on
and when to infiltrate.
Point out though that he's not sending the mail to Paradise. He's sending the mail somewhere, but they're not. It's not like they're delivering mail to Paradise.
Yeah,
I assumed it was Paradise.
Yeah, but it's why would they be? You think the postal workers from Marley are going over to Paradise and tossing a bag of letters over the wall?
I don't know.
They got carrier pigeons.
Yeah.
So it's
where is it going? Is this a spoiler? Is this a spoiler then?
We know that Aaron is sending letters within Marley, and we know that Jean is also.
You know what? I never even thought that they were sending letters within Marley. I was like, oh, bitch.
Mm-hmm.
He's sending them to Mikasa. They're love letters.
Yeah, I mean, Jean at a minimum, but presumably everybody, I mean, because, generally everyone's working in a group, Jean at a minimum, but presumably everybody else is already in Marley, and Aaron is separated from them and sending them letters to be like, hey, I'm okay. Don't freak out just because I split off from the group. I'm doing my own thing.
Gotcha. Okay, so now back to the basement. Aaron's in the basement, and he goes, Reiner, fuck you, buddy. I'm here, bitch. I'm back, bitch.
I'm back, bitch.
Yeah. Which makes you think he has no intent, or maybe no intent to attack at that moment. He's just letting him know. Like, what can Reiner do? What is he going to do,
I'm just confused at, like, why he revealed himself in that situation.
Like,
in that moment. Because, like, wouldn't you want to sneak attack him and just, like, murder him in his sleep? You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
Just saying, I would probably want to murder him in his sleep. So
yeah, I don't think.
Wake up, bitch! I'm murdering you.
I'm gonna draw from the next episode preview though, because I don't think Aaron actually wants to murder Reiner, because the next episode preview, the narrator states that, you know, Aaron tells Reiner that we are the same. So I think he wants to meet Reiner to have, you know, a more emotional conversation.
To go on a date.
To suck his dick.
Yeah.
To get hooked up with Gabby.
No. What's the age of consent in this world?
In the Marleyan world.
Oh my God.
10.
Dang.
Wasn't the age of consent in Japan like 13 until like 3 weeks ago or something?
That wouldn't surprise me.
There's fucking incest everywhere.
Yeah, Japan's fucked up.
Yeah, you fucked up Japan.
Yeah, it's a good point. He's like, you know, let's have a one-on-one discussion. This is our plan. If you don't want to join us, maybe then we're gonna kill you. We're gonna kill you and attack this base.
Yeah, I think Reiner is definitely not stepping to Aaron. You know, Aaron may or may not step to Reiner based on next episode preview. It doesn't seem like that's gonna happen. But this is the same Reiner that, you know, was about to blow his brains out two episodes ago over the incredible guilt that he feels. So he's definitely not going to lash out at Aaron.
Why don't we talk about the preview a little bit at the end and then wrap this up?
I can't wait for the next episode.
Yeah, we're gonna take a week off because there's no episode next week.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah,
that's right.
Good cliffhanger. It's like the only cliffhanger so far from this season.
Yeah, true. That's true.
Arguably. But it feels like, so yeah, this is, change is coming and finally going to get some.
Aaron reveals himself. Yeah, shit. Yeah. The ante's been raised. Shit's getting real.
You still hating it, Amelia?
This episode? I feel like we're finally getting to the episodes that I'm going to like. I feel like this was like a slow incline.
I think we can also tell, they didn't specifically say this, but I think we can also surmise that next episode is going to be a giant info dump. And the reason I think this is because Willie Tiber makes the point when he's making his speech to all the foreign dignitaries. He says, I'm going to explain everything to you tomorrow through my theatrical performance. You know, I will tell you. So Willie Tiber doesn't say it like this, but he more or less communicates in his speech that he is going to reveal all the secrets that the Tiber family is privy to and then explain, you know, their plan and what it is they're going to do about it. So, yeah,
I hope they do that swiftly. And then, like, we get a little action at the end of the episode. It's like,
yeah. Kind of makes me think of the BNA episode, the first episode where they had the festival. I don't know. It's not a great parallel, but it just makes me think of, they can explain a lot, like you said, in this festival, this theatrical play or whatever it's going to be, and you can learn through this episode.
The actions, yeah.
Yeah, and then somebody is going to come by and someone's going to sabotage it.
Yeah.
Like in B&A.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for the next episode. Too bad I got to wait a whole 2 weeks.
Yeah, the fuck is that?
Could it be a double episode? Or a longer episode?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm gonna have to go read the manga now.
No. We can't have two people in here spoiling it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. I think, well, if I had to watch all these episodes again without the opening closings, four episodes, I'd be hyped, I think. It would feel like the beginning of a film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The first act of the film.
Maybe that could be our homework, is that we all rewatch all the episodes again. That's what we'll do instead on next Sunday's watch party. We'll just watch all four of them again.
So didn't speaking of our watch party, didn't Matt point out on the Discord that something has changed about the OP in this episode? I kind of remember seeing that flash across my computer screen at some point, but I didn't actually go into Discord and read it. I might be.
I think you mentioned it, but I'm not sure if it was true.
Word.
Yeah, Matt, did they change the
music?
The opening?
Music's the same.
Visuals.
Okay. Yeah.
Done now.
The opening theme, I don't know about you guys, but it's grown on me even more. Mm-hmm. I find myself singing along to the melody.
Not me.
Yeah.
There's a fucked
that weird high pitched, almost like an auto tune thing going on somewhere in there. I don't know, some weird effects. I think you should listen to the entire song, Dan, if you haven't yet.
I have not yet.
Maybe
so. What? You're the one that always says, I'm not skipping it.
Yeah, I don't skip it, but I'm not going to go.
Oh, you meant the full one.
Yeah, the full version of the song.
Oh, got you. Okay. All right. I was like, you're the one that says, don't skip it.
I want him to bring back the Yoshiki ballads.
All right, guys, that has been The Road to Paradise, and we have been the Otaku Host Club podcast. I'm Amelia.
And I'm Dan.
And this is Jeff.
And we will see you in the next episode, which will be 2 weeks from now. I'm so sad about this. Anyway, bye.
See ya.